I'm warning you. You'll regret coming here.
You and your little army gonna take us on?
I can't let it go.
Oh, but I can.
Welcome to Series 4, Episode 45 of Conversational Legal Mountain, a podcast about the tribe. I'm your host, Lance, and joining the podcast panel today is Liz.
Hello.
Sabine.
Hi.
And Tamsin.
Hello.
We have episode notes done by Matt and myself. So Series 4, Episode 45, the screenplay was done by Bevin Lincoln. It was directed by Costa Boats, and the episode synopsis was read out by Sabine.
As the gang violence escalates, both the Mallrats and the Technos regroup and consider their next moves. Pride finds that trust is hard to regain.
So Bevin, as who wrote this episode, Bevin Linkhorn, we will all know Tribe family, tribe fans, as Ned from season 3. And we all feel he did a great job here. So well done, Bevin. We would have liked to have seen more of your work.
Absolutely. I knew there was something different as soon as I was watching this. The writing was much better. And that's why I stuck around for the credits. And I said, wait a minute, that name looks familiar.
Can you imagine what the ending of season 4 would have been like had he stayed on?
Oh, my gosh. don't, because when you put in Bevin and you put in Dan, and then you think you want to cry because It could have been something really good. I mean, you would have had to have waded through 45 episodes of absolute crap, but still.
Now you guys got me all thinking, like, oh, we could have had some actual genuine character moments between Tyson and Lex and all kinds of actual genuine emotion and stuff. But yeah, no, we can't have good things.
We can't have nice things.
I liked how the actors, because you got the feeling that they did enjoy this script, were doing more. They really leaned into it. I liked it.
Yeah, there was definitely a subtlety to the storytelling that stuck with me. And I can't really give any specific examples. It's just something you feel when you're watching a story and how the characters are talking, how they're reacting to what's happening to them. And I just thought that, you know, this felt like people talking to each other. I mean, granted, there were a couple things that, you know, had to be squeezed into the script. It kind of like when you're watching an MCU movie, you can tell the stuff that has to be in there because it's part of the Marvel universe compared to the stuff that the auteur director, the story they're trying to tell, you can always tell the difference. And I did feel that in this. I felt the stuff that felt very genuine from the writer telling a story about these characters for this one episode. And you could feel the things that had to be wedged in because it's already a part of a story, the bigger whole or whatnot. And those are a little clunky, but overall I thought the subtlety in the writing, the characters reacting up to each other, the fact that it felt like there were some emotional consequences to events. It was very smooth. It was a little bit like butter. I liked it. Well done, Bevin.
So, violence in the city over the game continues to spiral dangerously out of control, led by an enthusiastic May who's waving the flag for the Blues. As the Mallrats return home, they find themselves in an ambush.
Where's Jay?
He's not with us.
We won't ask again.
We've tried telling them that we don't know.
You've heard the sheriff. Now get out of here or you'll be sorry.
Oh, really? Haven't you noticed that you're slightly outnumbered? As city leader, I order you to leave. Right now! Get out of here! Maybe we should take you all on until you give us Jay.
Although Celine tries to stand up to the mob, first with words and then with a fist, it's Siva who eventually swoops in to save the tribe. So yeah, panel, how did you react to the continued violence, Celine's attempts to defuse the ambush, and Siva's moment of glory?
I will give a shout out to the direction. I really liked the city shots on the cameras of seeing the fights breaking out everywhere. I appreciated that they gave you several different points of view where the fighting was taking place. It doesn't matter that they were reusing the extras and just moving them from location to location. I appreciated the effort to show them in different locations fighting everywhere to give you the illusion that this is what the streets look like everywhere, just kids fighting each other. I really appreciated that. It gave that sense of chaos that we're supposed to feel is happening by showing us chaos happening everywhere. And I really appreciated that. The whole Lex, I can't hit a girl, getting punched, and Celine going, well, I can. You know, it's fine. It's a perfectly fine moment. And that girl definitely deserved to get punched. So I'm glad somebody freaking did it. And I like Siva having her moment to swoop in and show what she can do and why they would have asked her to do this in the first place, to train people up. It was nice to see a competent fighter again. And so, you know, kudos to her. She deserved her flowers.
I also really liked the moment with Siva. It was cheesy, but it was, I agree with you, it was nice to see her get to basically swoop in and save everybody, especially Lex. And I think it gave their relationship a different sort of dimension. And I think finally you understood why he was so put off by her always playing the housewife. Because this is the Siva that he's basically into. So I like that. But I also like this tiny moment when Siva comes in and she does the thing she does, the fighting. And then Mouse does a kind of like little dance. Yeah. It's really cute. I love the interactions between them.
Mouse is so adorable in that.
She really is.
Just the whole energy with, yay, Siva's here. Everything's going to be all right now.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do have some appreciation for the moment where Celine punches that girl because she had it coming.
Oh, yeah. And she was begging to be punched in the face.
Yeah, but it's nice to see Celine finally doing something like that.
Did this feel natural for Celine? I guess my question is.
Not from how things have been written, yeah. But if they had actually explored Celine's journey, this would make perfect sense for her to reach this point. This is where Celine could have been heading the whole time. This is what they kind of presented Celine as when she first showed up, as someone who was done taking BS from anybody. It's not this episode's fault that they haven't done anything with that for her. So I accept it. Because I'm just like, you've been teasing that Celine is someone who won't take the crap anymore, you know? Yeah. And this is something that Celine you've been promising us and telling us exists, but not showing us. This is what that Celine would do. If her home is being threatened by a frickin' mob who physically assaults one of her own, this Celine would punch that person in the face. Mm-hmm. So I buy it.
Yeah, it reminds me of the scene with Celine way earlier where she holds that rattle to shut everyone up.
Yeah, yeah, you're right. Yeah, it echoes that.
Like for me, I always forget that that wasn't the same scene, that it wasn't in the same moment. But I think especially for this moment with how severely pissed off Celine is right now, thanks to everything with Bride, combined with this little bit. Yeah, I guess she's finally letting go.
Yeah.
And punching someone down. Yeah, sure.
She's had enough. She's not going to take it anymore.
Mm-hmm. It's not something we'll continue to see a lot from her, but in this moment, it feels fitting.
I think, and the motivations, I mean, I think as human beings, everybody reaches their limit, don't they? Where they're like, actually, I've had enough. And a lot of the time, it's like you say, it's not actually to do with this one thing. It's actually to do with everything that's happening, like with Pride, like with the fights in the city. Nobody's listening to her. You know, it's that combination of everything. And the fact that this girl has been repeatedly in that infirmary, getting into these fights all the time, not changing her behavior. She has had this coming for a long time, and Celine is going to give it to her.
Yeah, that's fair.
Not to mention, Celine has been established from early on that she is someone who can get physical when she's reached the end of her rope. Mm. You know, there are characters who have never been that way. For example, Amber has never been established as someone who will get physically violent when she's angry, because seen it. It's just not her. So if Amber lashed out at someone physically, it would feel out of character for her, because she has such self-control over herself. Like, when it comes to how angry she gets, she might make a threat, but she never has acted on a physical threat to anybody, no matter how angry she's been at them. But I have seen Celine lose her cool and lash out at someone physically from the moment I met her, you know? So it is baked in that she is someone who could be like, you know what? I've had enough. You'll get these hands. You know what I mean? It just takes a lot to get her there, you know?
Yeah. It's not out of character. It's just not well developed or built up, I guess, is what I'm trying to.
Yeah.
I
feel like in this bubble of an episode, it works, because I feel like this is a Celine they've been trying to promise us. And every now and then you'll see it in an episode, a little spark of the Celine they've been promising ever since her return, but not delivering on. And in here, I feel like the screenplay took advantage of, this is the perfect time for that Celine to come forth and use it, you know? And again, that's why I said, like, this episode, it's not at fault for all the other crap, all the rest of the storytelling that just hasn't done a good job getting here, because this has been there simmering under the surface. Mm-hmm. They just have never delivered on this Celine who is this empowered. They've just teased us with this Celine, you know? And so I was like, yeah, that's good. This was the perfect moment to have her lash out at the perfect person. And I really love Lex's reaction to Siva stepping in. You know, it was a nice touch. Again, this episode does a lot to bring to the front aspects of the characters that have been promised throughout the season, but have never really reached their full potential. So a mature Lex who isn't threatened or emasculated by his female partner protecting him physically, and instead is turned on by it and compliments her on it, and even says, that's the warrior woman that that's who I was into in the first place. You washing my socks was not a turn on, lady, but you kicking someone's butt for my sake? Hell yeah. I liked that. Again, it's like we've been given sprinkles of the promise of this Lex, and they've never come to fruition, and we've just been disappointed. But here he is. This is the Lex that he should have always been, growing into this mature guy with a sense of, like, I'm not emasculated by having a strong woman. I like strong women, because he always did kind of like strong women, you know, and had to battle with feeling a bit emasculated or scared of them, but also being highly attracted to them, you know. And so to reach a point where he's like, yes, that's exactly what I like about you. You can punch someone for my sake anytime you want. You know, that's hot. I liked that. I thought that was a great reaction from him.
Yeah. And as I said before, it also explains away while he was kind of put off by her housewife routine. That was not doing it for him. He also knew that maybe she didn't feel it either. You know, this is your natural state, Siva.
This whole episode, it's really great in its own bubble. And it just tells you what this whole season of character development could have been.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And it's kind of almost depressing when you think about it. Because it's like, this episode the story is being told by somebody who really cared about these characters and really envisioned how they would have grown into these people based on the things they've been through in their past.
Yeah.
My goodness, could you imagine what would have happened if he wrote an episode like this and we still would have had someone like Alice around? Nope, shouldn't think about that.
Don't go there, Sabine. Don't do it to yourself. It's torture.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Because there's so much woulda, shoulda, coulda when we watch this back. Mm-hmm. And I just think, you know, you can reach a point where it's too much.
As Bray once said, it's all those my defense.
Yeah. And Bray is right.
Yeah. Meanwhile, Pride leads Jay and Ebony to safety through the sewer network and out of the city. Jay thanks him and names him friend and follows it up with a hug.
Look, if you don't want my thanks, then accept my friendship.
You nearly died because of me, Jay.
But I didn't. Let's forget about who saved who and when. And if you owe me or I owe you for saving each other's lives, let's forget all that. We're friends. And friends look out for one another.
Yeah, the evolution of Pride and Jay's relationship, I kind of think it's been a rather odd affair, but what did you make of it, Panel?
Oh, this is another...
Well, you go.
Okay, I was just going to say, it's another moment that makes you imagine, it gaslights you into thinking that they've actually developed these two story well.
Right.
But but you can see the makings of what could have been, because there have been landmark moments between Jay and Pride throughout the season. The storytelling has been a hot mess, getting us from one moment to the next, but the moments exist. You know, you got to remember all the way back, these two were at each other's throats, but they ended, Jay still saved Pride's life. Pride has saved Jay's life. You know what I mean?
Yep.
And so like, when you imagine what the story could have been to get these two to this point, like, it could have been really beautiful. That's why I said this episode exists in a really lovely bubble told by someone who loves these characters, cares about them, and has put a lot of thought into how people get emotionally from one point to the other. And it's just like, because I was like, this is actually a really nice moment. Too bad the story leading up to it has been garbage. Like, because this is a great moment between the two of them when I think about them on the electric fence, like where these people started, you know, and the conflict that Pride had over saving Jay's life and the fact that Jay was only on that fence to save Pride's life, even though they didn't like each other, to hear where Pride was going to kill Jay and Jay was able to make him like come out of his fog. And Jay's holding no hard feelings about it. He's just like, no, we're cool. You know what I mean? And then Pride returns that favor with that grace and does what he can to save Jay and getting him out of the city. I'm like, this is actually a really gorgeous moment if you ignore all the garbage storytelling that led to it.
If you forget 89% of the storyline.
Right.
Can I just add something? I just wanted to say, so we talk a lot, obviously, the tribe is plagued with replacement characters. We have lots of characters that fill the spaces of other characters, and we've had that since season two. I think what's really interesting here is that you've got this situation between Pride and Jay, and it very much reminds me of the sort of instances we saw between Bray and Lex. Yep. And how, in a different world, it would have been Bray, would have been Lex taking Bray and whoever it was through the sewer system. And I think that's quite interesting. I just saw it and I thought, that reminds me of when Lex took Bray and Amber out of the city, or when Lex did this thing. And it feels like Pride's kind of taken up that position where he's this sort of gray, although we see him as gray, the writers are trying to make out that he's like a great guy and these bad things have just happened to him. But he is, if you look at the character that is actually being presented on screen, you know, he is very gray, he's very hard to like, and I wonder if that's why we've had it, this whole season really has been sort of Lex light, because Pride's kind of taken that position.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Just seeing this scene just totally reminded me of those kind of interactions that we got between Bray and Lex.
I get what you're going for, and it's possible that the writer just saw the potential between that should have always been there.
Yeah.
They could have been so interesting to see together. There could have been so much more conflict between these two.
Yeah. I mean, it's another shoulda, woulda, coulda, because, like, it's built up really well here. And like you say, Liz, like you say, Sabine, there was so much fertile ground from when they were on the electric fence to all of their interactions. And it just feels sort of wasted, really.
Yeah, agreed.
I really liked the scene in the sewer. I thought that was nice. I wish we'd seen more of that in the city. It was always a unique part of the mall, of that's how they snuck in and out of their home base. And it was just nice to bring the sewers back in as a way. And, you know, I thought that was a nice touch to be like, we can't get you out of city without you being seen. There are cameras everywhere and there's fights all in the street and you two are highly recognizable. Let's go underground. I thought that was neat. I even like that Pride references that he knows this because there used to be tribes on their side, you know? Yeah. And I thought that was just nice to mention there used to be other tribes in this city.
And, but it's also a nice explanation as to why Pride and Outsider now knows these secret routes because, you know, however long the timeline's been, he's been living out in the woods, in the forest with people. They wouldn't necessarily know these things. But suddenly, it kind of fills the gaps that we didn't get when he was at the power plant, at the power station, when he was there and he knew his way around. And it was just, it was nice. It's just a line of dialogue explaining, like you say, that there had been other tribes and they kind of like told him about this in the past. It's bits like that. It's the attention to detail that we got in this script that we've not had with anything else.
It's a layer of creativity and love for this world, of its possibilities being injected into the story.
Yeah.
And it's with these tiny things. Like, I would absolutely buy someone like May magically knowing this because she did.
Yeah.
So to just them giving us that little tiny hint of backstory as to why Pride knows something like this helps so much. It helps for the believability.
And it's a fun way to get them out of the city. It's something we haven't seen in a really long time, you know? And I was like, oh, that's so awesome. I love it. I mean, if we ignore the fact that Pride's addiction is completely kicked all of a sudden, cold turkey, no problems now, and completely in his right mind. If you ignore all that.
His addiction, it was part of hypnosis. Like, all Jay had to do was say the magic word Amber.
And I love Jay and Ebony's wave to the camera. You know, I thought that was cute when she lets him know, by the way, you know, Ram can see us. And Jay, instead of being like, oh, that's a concern, instead he gloats and smiles like, hey, what's up? I got your girl. I was like, oh my gosh, somebody loved this world and these characters.
Although I am just going to put one spoke in the wheel there and just say that it does feel like there's a cut in the middle of this where, you know, we had May, she was waving a flag with her blue headband on, and then the next time we see her, she's in a bed having her brow mopped by Celine, and Celine's like, you could have been wasted.
No,
and I just wonder if they cut something.
She was in the mall when Siva came into the mall. May was standing beside her.
Oh, okay. I just kind of must have missed that then.
She was a bit wobbly on her feet.
Right. Yeah, we did see her out there, and I just wondered if they had cut like maybe her getting roughed up or something. Maybe they'd had to cut it because the censorship wouldn't let it go through. And yeah, it just, like, for me, it just felt in a script that was so well connected, it just stood out. And I thought, I wonder if they'd had to make a cut there.
But thankfully, we don't actually need to see May get injured.
Yeah.
To know what happened to her.
Mm.
Every time I want to speak, my connection goes crazy. So,
back at the mall, Dee confides in Celine, telling her about Patch's confession of love. However, as soon as they are left alone together, things turn awkward.
Listen, I've come to...
Yes?
I've come to help. It's a big mess, you know? Can't do it all yourself.
Just briefly, what do you make about them prolonging the sudden will-they-won't-they romance between the two?
Okay, so I just want to say that I didn't do last week's episode with you guys. So when I came into this one, I felt like, whoa, I've missed a lot of stuff. Especially with Dee and Patch.
Especially when you think about how little we had to say about last week's episode.
So was there a love confession last week?
Yes, there was.
Yeah, last week there was a very quick, in the moment, Patch suddenly blurted out to Dee that he... In case we don't make it. That was it. And then it was left out like...
Okay. Because, I mean, they have been building this for a bit. I mean, it has been sort of trailed a little bit, hasn't it? We know.
See, this is the thing.
Yeah, go on.
You say that, but, like... See, so, on Patch's side, they've kind of have slowly built it up, even though he wasn't really that interested in her to start with. Then, okay, last couple of episodes, it started to build up. But from Dee's point of view, there's been nothing...
She was very worried about him when he was missing. I wonder.
Worried, obviously, yeah. But...
Yeah, but she was the only one who actually worried. I wonder if that was the writer's ham-fisted attempt at saying, oh, she cared.
That's what I mean. Suddenly he was like, oh.
The part where they tried to make us see that was Celine's stupid comment about, oh, you must be into him if you're worried about his safety.
So all of a sudden they suddenly tried to ramp this up. Like, oh. These two suddenly love each other, but haven't spoken about it. It's like, when? Literally, a couple of episodes back, we had her looking forlornly at Lex and Siva getting together back. You know what I mean? Like, no, you can't just throw this. It's too sudden.
Yeah, I agree. And, I mean, there's some interesting character work here to be done, because obviously Dee's type is Lex, so her suddenly developing feels for Patch is the binary opposite of Lex. Would be interesting, but I mean, look, I'm gonna get the missed opportunity button out and hit it now. Mm-hmm. Okay,
they're mainly trying to quickly get these two together so we'll understand why they vanished together.
This is what it feels like, it's exactly what it feels like, because they are leaving. I think they know at this point,
really.
So it feels like they're shoving them together so that we can get them wrapped up, and they're about to leave. Like, that's what it does,
so they're clearing the way, right?
Yeah.
It's such a shame. Because, I mean, I know a lot of people would say, well, their relationship can't really exist in the same universe as Jack and Ellie, but their relationship is completely different. They're different characters. They feel fleshed out enough from Dee and Ellie and Alice, and Patch feels fleshed out from Jack and Dal, that you could have had them all in the same universe. It's a shame if they know now that they're going to get rid of them.
Yeah, but that's what they do with replacement characters.
I'm here. I just don't trust my connection. I came back, but I just don't know if you guys can hear me.
Maybe now's the time to let us know what you thought of Dee and Patch.
I don't think the storytelling for them is... It always feels pigeonholed into the script when there's discussion of how they feel about each other, whether they're talking to each other or talking to other people. It feels like a last second addition. There's something awkward about it. And maybe that's the point, but I think they've done moments between Patch and Dee well at times. So I don't know why it's so hard for them to script them talking about their developing feelings. It always feel like Celine's talking to Dee about a completely different, they're talking about a different subject, and then somehow they pulled into it. It just didn't feel like the natural flow of conversation. Like, how are we talking about this now? I don't know. Every time it just feels a little weird. And I guess I'd rather their relationship be developed just by moments between them rather than these awkward conversations.
Yeah.
Stop telling Dee's confused and just show me. I think they're better at just showing the two of them together.
Yeah. Yeah, because there's been a fair... I mean, I know we have said that it's come out of nowhere for Dee, but I did like when she was kind of having that awkward talk with him, and you could see that she couldn't believe she actually fancied this guy, but that she did. And that was all in her actions. That wasn't in the script. It was when he kept walking into the chair and kept walking into things. Mm-hmm. And I knew she was thinking, my God, I've caught the feels for this guy. And he's like a clown.
Okay. Yeah. Let's move on to the technos.
Oh God. Sorry. I didn't mean to talk over you.
Dreaded words.
So Java bristles at Ved's relief at Jay's escape, and the two argue over how to stop the violence in the city. with Ved insisting they have to stop the game. Java is a step ahead by initiating curfew and forcing everyone indoors. But looking further ahead, Ved is looking to create a new game. So yeah, just what do you make of the techno-politics in this episode?
So I just wanted to go back. A while ago, we had a conversation about Ram and the way that he looks at the world. And it's very a Ram-centric look on the world. And I think it's interesting that what we took from that episode is his plans are essentially bonkers. And I think you see that perfectly crystallized in the breakdown of everything that's going on in the city, but also what's going on inside the technos.
Mm-hmm.
And it feels like a runaway train and sort of no one's got any real idea of what's going on and they're all scrambling to try and fix this momentous mistake that he's made by letting what happens, you know, let's be honest, there was already turf warfare going on with the Reds and the Blues before he decided that he was going to turn the city into one giant game. And that's just enhanced it more because now everybody who's playing the game is now out on the streets fighting or looking for Jay. And it's just devolved into chaos. And I think that's really interesting. And it just shows that although Ram is presented as a genius, he seems to lack any sort of understanding of people's motivations or cause and effect or any of that stuff. And all of the stuff that they needed to happen, like they need people to be in the mines, they need people to be shoveling coal to feed this labyrinthine plan that he's got to live in reality space. But all of that falls apart because he's decided, no, I want to take revenge on this guy in the middle of the city and have everybody join in. And I thought it was quite interesting.
I like the concept of someone thinking they could create controlled chaos to get what they want and failing because they're so emotional and, as you said, self-centered, where Mega proves to be a much better game maker than Ram ever was because Mega also utilizes controlled chaos to remake the world as he thinks it should be. And he actually gets things done. He knows exactly how much chaos is just like all the chaos, all of it. Yes. You know? So I like this concept that this is a monster of their own making. And now they don't know what to do with the monster.
You also get the feeling, and again, this is all off set. It's not in the script, but you do get the feeling that people have tried to counsel him against doing this. But because like we all say, Ram, everything is about Ram, whereas Mega, I think it is about Mega, but it's to a plan in which, like you say, he wants everything to work in a certain way and for order. But Ram just wants a big kind of statue and for everything kind of to revolve around him. And everything that he plans kind of goes from like, what would I do in this situation? Whereas I think from Mega's point of view, it's what would they do and what do I want to stop them doing?
Mega wants to control the situation. Ram wants to be adored.
Yes. Yeah, basically. Yeah, you've summed it up.
I was just thinking, I do like, though, in this whole scene where, you know, Java's doing one thing, Fed's doing the other thing. I think it's nice to see that Fed's instant response is, okay, we'll just give him another game. Because from his point of view, that'll also make them distracted about finding his brother.
Yes. And also,
it serves more than one purpose.
Yes, it does. And also, I think it picks up a story strand, which they've picked up a couple of times, the writers, and dropped, which is something we always talk about with the technoses. They've all got different agendas. They're not a proper tribe. They're all just people who have kind of found each other because they have a shared interest or a skill set, but they're not a proper tribe. So when things start to go wrong, they all start to repair it in individual ways, which we didn't see with other tribes, because other tribes are more like, if you look at the Chosen, for instance, they're all aligned under this pseudo-religious ideology. Yeah. And it's all coming from the Guardian and they're just doing what he's telling them. But in the technos, it's not necessarily like that. They're more, they've got more autonomy, but because they have more autonomy, there's more chances of them actually breaking the machine when they try to fix it.
Yeah, I like that. They're not very homogenous. They never have been.
It's also the key to their downfall. And, I mean, Ved and Java are equally out of their depth. So they go back to their corners of the ring. So Ved goes back to what he knows what to do, which is, like you said, Sabine, I'll just create another game and that will take the heat off my brother, but it will also take the heat off the city. We'll be able to get it under control again. And Java, she goes back to her corner, and her corner also contains Ram. And it's just, I need to get you back online, because without you, none of it really matters. We can't control anything if you're not here.
And Ved does have the extra agenda of making Ram proud and happy, proud of him and happy again.
Yeah. And, I mean, we can't not factor in Chloe into this as well.
Which is why Ved needs him happy and content.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, I mean, you go, Lance.
No, I was going to say, it's interesting how neither of them are leadership material.
No.
But you can see the seeds being planted for Ven. It would have been interesting to have witnessed him take over completely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. A shame.
Well, I think in a previous episode, that's probably what we would have seen, wouldn't we? We would have seen him being much more capable. And I think you had a shadow of that when he went into reality space to get Ram out. You saw him doing more leadership stuff. But I think that since obviously he's going in the next couple of episodes or the next episode, it kind of, they're rowing back on that.
I also think the scene between Java and Ved is very well acted. Their emotional motivation things out of the situation, and it really reads on their faces. I would have liked to see it be Java and Ram rather than Java and Mega. I just like their conversation.
I mean, I'm going to pick up your thread there, Liz, because you threaded it so well. I'm going to say, again, we've spoken about this a lot. I'm going to say it one more time. I think losing Dan is just such a disaster, because every scene he's in, he raises the scenes and you actually feel like something might happen and that there's some sort of jeopardy. And that's even without all the Chloe stuff. It's just, he's a really good young actor, and it was such a shame. They made such a silly mistake in getting rid of him.
I had a question about that. Because it does feel like he's raised his acting game since Jamie left. Do you think there's a correlation there? Or,
well, maybe. I mean, I know people have said on here it's not really fair that Jamie went and then he stayed around. But I've always wondered if maybe she was on a warning before, and then that's why. But you don't know, do you?
You don't know. But it isn't fair that he stayed on.
No, it's not fair. It is so unfair.
She was instantly gone. And then, as we will find out, he just vanishes and they don't even wrap up his time on the show anyway.
Exactly. They had the time to wrap his storyline up.
They had the time. Yeah. And they still went, nope, he vanishes. Like, what? How?
It's ridiculous, it's like someone
felt very particular about not giving him a proper send-off.
But like, there have been multiple places, like we've all said, there have been multiple places where you could have sent him off.
So many
and they kind of missed it every time.
It just feels like that was on purpose.
I mean, like, yeah, no, when I don't, you put it like that,
like, I don't want him to have a decent ending because of whatever pity party reasons.
What?
I mean, I think sometimes some of the adults probably should have stopped acting like children on this show and stopped expecting the children to act like adults.
Mm-hmm.
Ram continues to spiral after Ebony's betrayal, staring at the cameras and eventually retreating into reality space. But even there, he can't find the happy ending with Ebony that he's hoping for. Yeah, what did you think of the depiction of Ram's deteriorating mental state? And obviously the AI scripted program suddenly not working as it should.
I liked the AI stuff. I mean, I think sometimes in speculative fiction, it wanders into, like when you think about Star Trek, some of the technologies that they've kind of imagined and then they've come into being. I felt that here when I was watching AI Ebony, because I think Meryl does a great job. That's not the Ebony we know. That is definitely an AI creation, and she does that really well. And the fact that she's only been programmed with a couple of things she can actually say, and the AI is just repeating them at random or repeating them in a different way, all of that felt really good and felt really sort of the world that we're living in today. I thought that was really interesting.
I keep wondering, you guys. So Ram's program failing. Do we really think Fed, or Mega for that matter, had nothing to do with that? A program like that doesn't just magically start acting like that.
No.
No. But we've never really known the limits or the sort of guy, like, what can he do there? It's the nebula site, so the reality space has always been so faintly sketched. Like, you had Lex going in there all the time and it was wired up so it could kill him, and then Pride got completely hooked on it just by doing it a couple of times. But then you've had other characters like Mouse and Sammy that have been on it all the time and don't seem to be addicted to it. So I think, like, it's really confusing. What is the limits of reality space? Could it be that Ram himself in this emotional state is doing this to the program? Or, like you say, has somebody done it to it? You just don't know.
See, this is the thing. They're mixing several different things here. Because, yeah, like, this is like Ram's own mind, which is fighting against him. That's one separate issue. But this is actually his AI program, which has working, talking, fighting people in it. And then you suddenly they're breaking down and not responding properly to how they're programmed to respond. It's like, you can't have it both ways. It's either his mental mind or an AI scripted program that's actually responding correctly. But you're confusing the two and mixing them.
I really don't want to know what Liz was going to say. We can't hear us. No, it's like being in space. No one can hear you scream.
you know what? I think I know what it is.
What?
It's the same issue as what happened with Ram's stuff.
Oh my God! Yeah, Lutz, you need to keep this in. This is valuable conversation. So we've solved the issue with Ram's tech. Oh, she's gone. Can I also ask, what was stopping Java from just getting a headset and going in?
I have no clue, honestly.
She's not skilled enough, apparently. Only Red can do that.
She's too stupid to?
Isn't it just an open environment that they can all just go into? Because we've seen them do that in the past.
Clearly it isn't. She can't go in without Ram's permission. Whereas Ved can go in because he knows how the system works.
Yeah, he knows how to, I guess.
She's not done the permissions.
Nope.
When you have to go reject to prove, do you want cookies? Yeah, she hasn't done them. Okay, I can see Liz. She's like a little deer. Don't spook her.
No, I understand. We're almost there, but I know it's frustrating.
Won't be the same. I really want to know what she was going to suggest, because you know it'd been great. Because it always is. Right, so, yeah, I think it's really unclear what the limits of what the limits of reality space are. And, like, it's just yet another thing that they haven't defined properly. So when stuff like this does happen, you think, okay, well, what does any of this actually mean? What does this mean?
I would have actually enjoyed it if they had just stated that this was Fed causing this.
Yeah.
Because that would have been fun. Like, if this would lead to Ram needing Fed, and Fed just being like, okay, he needs me. Well, if he wants that, he needs to give me Chloe back, or something like that.
Yeah. It would also have made sense, because if he disappears in the next episode, why he was disappeared.
Yeah, because that would completely tie in with, Ram getting mad about that. with, oh, you messed with my reality space, so now you're gone.
Lance, do you want to read out Liz's suggestion that's come into the chat? I can see it. It says, so Liz was going to suggest, what if Ram's AI can only perform what it's been programmed to say or do, but it can't improvise? Ram went in there with AI Ebony wanting something genuine and the program couldn't improv the answers. Yeah, I think Liz has hit it there. Yeah, the AI can only do what the AI is programmed to do and it can't be Ebony.
I agree. If that's like the special AI of Ebony he's made.
Yeah.
It's just obviously annoying because by the end of the season, we're going to have AI Zoo.
Yeah.
Yeah. And there are so many other options.
But yeah, I understand.
The AI could do.
But then AI Zoo, is he made by?
He's made Mega. By Ram.
Made by Mega. Mega? Oh, he's made by Ram.
Is it part Ram, part Mega?
Possibly.
Because I just thought Ram made the second version of AI Zoo, the one that he made in Liberty, and then. The first one
I thought was Ram.
Mega. Oh, okay.
I could be wrong. I could be wrong.
Season
4 is not my forte.
God, a lot's happened to us since we watched those episodes back then.
Wait. I'm confused. Was it Mega all along?
I'm not
confused.
Sure anymore.
Because when, how, what?
I totally thought that Mega was doing Zoo because we find out later on that he's using the Zoo program. And then...
the whole Master and Apprentice thing.
Yeah, and then Ram makes a random Zoo program in Liberty. And they just happen to have both made programs of Zoo. I was just assumed...
I know like Mega commandeered it to obviously do his plans with Java and stuff, but I thought it was a Ram initiative.
Oh,
again, control
God.
The city. But I could be completely wrong because my knowledge of season 4 is right. off. So don't.
Probably right, and I'm probably wrong. I've probably read too much into it, like I always do.
I'm suddenly just not sure anymore.
That's funny.
We're all AI
confused. Like,
none of us know what is going on.
Who made AI Zoo? But you know, the point though is like, you tell me, AI Zoo is fully functional, talking, able to talk back and forth with its interface. So, like, you know what I mean? It's a bit, the jump that happens in this show is just
wild. Yeah.
AI says that Ram created Zoo.
Wait, you're asking, hang on, you're asking.
Sabine, don't do that.
But Sabine. That could just be AI because he did create a version of Zoo. That hasn't answered the actual question.
That could just be AI taking credit. We don't know.
Yeah. You've got to be specific with AI or they won't know what you're asking because it'll just pull out in season 5, Ram made a version of Zoo. Yes, that is technically true, but that's not what we're asking, AI. We're asking you at the end of season 4. When Ebony hears the voices, is that Mega or is it Ram?
We'll come back to this question and answer. Okay, yeah, let's wrap up stuff in the mall. So, following Jay's gratitude, Pride returns to the mall to a less enthusiastic reception. Realizing the Morat's plan to attack the scanning and gaming centers, he is concerned that this will only drive the players underground, but when he voices this, he obviously finds that the others are distrustful of his motives. So yeah, any comments about Pride's actions?
I hate Pride. I continue to hate Pride. And just because he gives Celine back those earrings, don't make me care about him or even want to trust him. I can understand why none of them trust him. Let's be honest. Even before he was addicted to the game, he was screaming in people's faces for, you know, pass me the jam, that sort of behaviour. So, yeah, no wonder they don't trust him. Anyway, let's put the mic on somebody who's more normal.
He just doesn't deserve their trust. But no. What annoyed me a lot about this is May suddenly going with a, okay, then take it from someone who who you can trust, you know, with a, oh, they would.
Well, they wouldn't, would they? Nobody trusts May on anything. But I think it's really unfair the way they kind of position Pride and May on the same sort of standing. I don't know.
Yeah.
It seems awfully unfair.
I don't like how they do that either, yeah.
Their addiction's not the same. No. It's really different. She was kidnapped and tortured into using this machine. And he was tortured by using the machine as well. But he could have spoken about his addiction to Celine. He could have talked to people in the mall. Lex gave him an opportunity. Celine has given him hundreds of opportunities to talk about what is happening to him. Jay's done it as well. And yet, no, he wouldn't open up about it. And it always feels it's rotten to me.
We have to remember, Pride had one dose of this VR experience. May has probably had countless experiments when she was captured by the technos. They are not the same. I really don't like the show keeps conflating the two and showing them as if they're on a similar journey. They are not. Please stop it. I don't like it.
Yeah. I agree. I think Liz has put something in the chat. Hang on.
So I'm just going to read out Liz's comment here. So she says that she's very glad there are consequences to Pride's actions and no one trusts him or his motivations. His sudden sanity shouldn't be trusted, and it'd be irritating if he all forgot how much he'd lied and hid from them this whole time. And yeah, that's completely true. I'm glad there are consequences for Pride's actual actions. Which we don't get a lot.
He doesn't just get let back in, which is good.
I'm kind of surprised they actually go through that effort, though.
Yeah,
it's.
I wonder if
the season's been telling us.
He's so loathsome, though. They had to do something, didn't they? And like we say, this is a much better script than we've had. So the character motivations are much clearer, and the way he's been acting, you know, he needs to do some penance. He needs to start. And the thing is, he needed to get those earrings back without the promise that Celine would forget anything all about it. He just needed to get those earrings back because it was the right thing to do, not because she would receive them and then be like, oh, do you know what? I will forgive you. No, he just needed to get them back because it was the right thing to do.
Yeah.
Since we're on the subject of the earring thing, I'm confused. So,
yeah.
Pride took the earrings originally, right?
Mm-hmm. He gave them to May.
He gave them to May.
Oh, that's right. Sorry. Yeah. That's where I was getting confused. I was like, how did you not? Okay, that makes sense.
Which is still an interesting part because May sold them knowing fully well where they came from.
Yeah, but I mean, May in this, there's been elements where she's, I mean, the addiction has enabled her in some ways to be close to maintain that closeness to Pride, hasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's that element to this.
I mean, that scene just epitomizes the whole addiction problem I have here. Like, we'd see no struggle, absolutely no struggle of him handing over a lifetime past to Reality Space. Yeah. There is not a single hesitation, some kind of flicker in his eyes, some, like, you know what I mean? Nothing to show that he is struggling with this. It's just gives it over.
It's to make us believe that Pride's suddenly all over it, and he's all good now, and we can go back to feeling okay about him again. So, you know, so we feel worse when he goes away.
There's been no effort. There's been no struggle. Yeah. There's been
You're not making us. Originally, he was a wimp.
This isn't endearing. Like, we would. Am I supposed to cheer for this guy? I feel nothing. Nothing. No. So, I'm not going to cheer for him.
We're just meant to forget he did something bad.
So, yeah, he gets the earrings and I'm supposed to be happy. Like, no, I'm not happy.
It's the bare minimum that he can actually do. Let's be honest.
Yeah, it's just to make us feel like he's been forgiven, even though he isn't.
Mm-hmm.
It's to get us as fans to forgive him. Wait, oh, he got her earrings back. I guess he's okay again. Ugh.
Yeah, and I think we as the audience know that he's given this lifetime pass, so he must really care about her because he absolutely loves Reality Space.
Mm-hmm.
But he cares about Celine more. So there you go.
Love wins.
Yeah.
Love conquers all. Even addiction with just one set of earrings.
Yeah, for balance, let me read out Liz's comment. She appreciates that he puts an actual effort into returning Celine's earrings. It does two things. It shows some guilt and remorse. And by giving up the lifetime pass he earned, he's actively choosing to walk away from the game. When it would be so easy to keep that pass and continue hiding his addiction. At the very least, it means when he says he wants to beat this. Yeah, it does. No, it absolutely does. It's just unearned. This is easy, unearned. But I get it, yeah.
But it makes it seem like addiction's easy to overcome like that.
When it's not, it's a process, everyday process.
Yeah.
You're fighting it every day, yeah.
And it's not just the magic word Amber was said, so now pride is cured and he can, consciously make choices about that without any struggle.
Yeah.
But this is exactly what you said, Tamsin, though, anyway, earlier on. It's like the levels of AI in this show, this whole series has been up and down so much. Addiction has been up and down so much, affecting some people, not affecting some other people. So it's just unbalanced all around.
Yeah. Well, I think it goes back to what we've talked about this whole season is a lack of clear direction of where all the characters are going, how the storylines are affecting the characters, and what motivates anywhere and where we're actually going with any of this. It seems to be that it's just moment to moment.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, this is the result, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm just sitting here thinking how much Lex had to struggle and how much he had to do to get, anything done with his alcohol addiction earlier. And then this is what we get for Pride.
And also how hard Lex had to work to get back to anything close to where he was, to get his family to take him back at all. And it seems like the addiction is all about Pride's addiction. We've not really seen anything about Maze.
No.
She's just an add-on to Pride. That's it. And we don't get any of, how does May feel about anything? What's happening to May? She's just a subplot.
Mm. Very much so. I don't.
So much that we don't even want to think about it.
Mm. It's a shame because, May has been in the show as a character longer than Pride. She's more established. I would say she's more interesting a character as well. And they're not talking about, levels of addiction as well and how people can pull each other further down into addiction. And none of that is really being discussed. And it, at different points, it felt to me like they were playing Pride and May as if it's an affair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, misjudged.
All right. Yeah. Oh, yeah. To wrap up, let's go to our final thoughts of the episode. So Mouse argues with Sammy after the overspill of the game into reality puts her off, and she announces to Celine that she doesn't want to play anymore. Unfortunately, she then chooses to occupy herself outside during the curfew. Since Pride is still distrusted by the rest of the tribe, he uses this as an opportunity to win back the respect of the guys by offering to go back and find her. So just to finish off, what do you think of Mouse in this episode and her role in Pride's potential redemption?
I love Mouse. I think she's absolutely great in this episode. Something that I really liked is that she does this thing where she says she's not afraid to admit when she's afraid, which I think is a really important thing. She has boundaries and she will not go past them. And I love that for her. She's like, no, it does scare me and I don't like being afraid. And yeah, I wish I was a bit more like that, to be honest. Mouse, you are a boundary queen and I love it.
Words of advice, yeah.
I do think, yeah. Know your boundaries and stick to them, yeah. I'd also say, though, I absolutely hate the fact that we're going to put Mouse in peril simply to redeem Pride.
Mm, yes.
Mm-hmm.
Hate it. This is the redemption arc gravy train of Pride. So he's got the earrings back. Yeah. He's apologized to everyone profusely. He's going to go out during curfew, during possible danger and entrapment to save Mouse. Like, shut up. I don't care. Just stop trying to make us care about Pride.
Yeah.
I'm also going to say this feels kind of out of character for Mouse, because this paints her as if she's really dim going out into the city when she knows about the curfew. And there she is just drawing bumblebees and flowers on a wall. It makes it seem as if she's actually about 5.
Yeah.
And she was afraid of what was going on in the city with all the fighting. So why would she decide to go in there on her own and start, she had paper and pens in the mall.
It's odd, because I mean, I guess she wanted to go outside, but she was scared of all the fighting. So because there was a curfew, she used that as an opportunity. I guess that's kind of what they were trying to go for.
Yeah,
so I guess there's no more fighting right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. But then there is a curfew, so
yeah, she's a bit more aware than that. Mm.
What time of day is it at this moment, though?
Oh, don't ever try and dodge the time of day on the train. It flicks so weirdly.
my brain just keeps going, why would there be a curfew in the middle of the day?
Because it is actually the middle of the day, yeah. It is, but...
Well, what we're going to find out is actually...
Is this a techno lunch break, or...?
It's midsummer. Right, we didn't know this before, but it's all set in like Sweden. Because I tell you, if this was the UK and it was winter, about 3:45, it'd be pitch black. She'd be doing that in nighttime goggles on, you know.
But it was cute, her painting on the walls. So using charcoal on the walls, it was quite nice.
Yeah.
Like imagery.
An artist.
Mm-hmm.
She's an artiste.
And she's adorable.
She is. She's so cute.
Doing something generally fun and safe. It was nice.
Yeah. Yeah. And I like the way, you know, the kids are not addicted. They just do it because it's cool at the time. But she was like, do you know what? It scares me and I don't want to play it anymore because it feels too real. And Sammy was like, well, I just want to go on to see what's happening with the game. But you can see that neither of them are addicts.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They're just into this because they liked it.
Yeah, and it's cool.
Yeah, it was a cool fad for them, but they were pretty much over it.
Yeah. It's essentially like having a laboo-boo, you know?
On to the next thing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Just to pick up on Liz's comment, were you worried about Mouse?
No.
No, Mouse is like Chloe in this for me, like young Chloe was. She'd go and do stuff like run after Bluebell, and it would be fine. It's all fine. Mouse can take care of herself.
We also know that all this is happening just to redeem Pride, so nothing too bad is going to happen to her.
That's true, yeah.
we always knew Pride was going to run off and save her, because he had to be redeemed. But this whole... You know, Pride saving her, it gave me a bit of Bray and Chloe vibes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I guess that's what they were going for in order to redeem Pride.
Yeah, mentioned the whole kind of Bray and Lex vibes earlier as well, and that kind of Lex and Chloe vibe. Yeah, it's like there's a lot of that, isn't it? A lot of playbacks, obviously, due to Bevin. Yeah. It feels like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Some nice callbacks, actually, yeah.
Yeah, there's some nice bits of mirroring that goes on in it. Mm. It's attention to detail, I think.
Yeah.
I think that's why it's popped off.
And because, it's like knowing. We all said.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's knowing what happened before at all.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. We don't get this usually. It's like forgetting whole histories of characters, but now we have like, oh.
it's so strange to us.
And things are getting rounded up as well. They're getting finished. Certain storylines are getting finished off. So we had technically kind of the Pride addiction storyline has been finished off here.
Yep.
So it feels like stories are reaching natural conclusions, which for a long time we haven't had that. It hasn't felt like that. It has just felt like it's lurched from one moment to the next. We've got the midpoint of Patch and Dee. You know, are they going to get together? Mm-hmm. Aren't they? Well, they've made clear inroads into the fact that Patch likes Dee. Dee might like Patch. He said it now. It's happened. And yeah. It just feels like now we're finally beginning to circle the drain to this actually being over. You know, storylines are coming to an end. We're not just continuing with it.
Yeah, it finally feels like we're nearing the end of this season.
Yes, it does.
Instead of just the very messy first part.
Yes, it feels like the first part's finally over. And now we can move into what's arguably going to be like the last six or so episodes of the finale.
See, I don't feel this momentum. I don't feel the story going towards anything. Like, there's some character beats finally, but where's the story? Doesn't feel propelling anywhere.
For me, it just feels like they're wrapping up the loose ends, you know?
Yeah.
It's not like a giant conclusion.
It feels like we're starting to position characters for the final beats. So, like, Ebony and Jay are finally out of the city, and Pride's addiction has been finished off. We finished that off finally. And yeah, we're sort of prepping all the characters for the next stage towards the end.
Don't feel it in this. I just don't feel it.
Oh, we're not saying that it's a glorious end of this season. It's more the, or exciting at all. It's more the, like, they're tying up all the tiny stories.
Yeah.
Right now.
Finally.
You know, just marking them off. They're ticking them off their list.
Yeah.
So apparently we must be near the end of the season.
Yes, because we're starting to go check, 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 check.
Yep.
But yeah, I agree with you. Like, this is not a glorious end. This is like, you know, when you have to hand in your homework or your assignment and you've done quite well, you've written most of it, but you need to do the conclusion and you just spaff out anything because you're like, I just need to hit the word limit and then it'll be over. That's what this feels like.
Yep. We need to wrap this up. We need to wrap this up quickly.
Yeah.
Because they wanted this season over with as much as we do.
Yeah,
that's what it feels like.
It's a experiment of a season, isn't it, really? They tried to do a thing. It's not really worked out. And
Bevan made it better.
They're bored of it. Yeah. Although, I got to be honest, I still think it's slightly more coherent, even though it's really, really boring. It's more coherent than the end of season 3. Because, I mean, at least these are threads that they've kind of played about with that have always been in it, like Ram's need for control and, you know, the relationship between Jay and Ebony, and you could go on and on about this. But at least these threads are ones that they had been sort of playing with. Ebony becoming city leader and then throwing out Bray and Amber. Yes, it's been a story they've kind of been playing with since season 1. But it still comes out of nowhere in season 3. That's the conclusion. It's just bananas for me.
So by the end of this, you're going to say you prefer the season 4 ending?
I think I am, yeah. And to be honest, you're going to say it too, are you? What did you say, Sabine?
No.
No.
Oh, no.
No.
I'm going to say, I think I prefer the season 4 ending. In fact, if I had to say if I preferred 4 or 3, I'm going to say I prefer 4.
Yeah, well, season 4 did have Fed.
The baggy ass of season 3 and the unfocused storytelling just kills it for me.
Yeah, I'm on both. On two different paths for this. Because on one hand, there are some parts of season 4 I really liked.
Mm.
Which I completely forgot that I actually liked them. Or not even realized before this rewatch. Because Fed is actually enjoyable.
Mm.
Whereas, especially in the end of season 3, they do so much damage to beloved characters like Alice.
Yeah.
That's if I have to hold it in the balance, Tamsin might be onto something here.
Oh my god. Thank you very much, Sabine. Coming from you, that means a lot.
We'll see if you hold this opinion still once we reach that Scooby-Doo ending for the Technos. That's all I'm going to say. Yeah. So, on that note, we're going to bring Series 4, Episode 45 to a close. Thank you very much to the panel, and you can show your support by clicking on that like and subscribe and following us on all the major platforms. You can also leave us a comment or get in touch if you'd like to take part in a future episode of Podcast Yourself. Just search for The Tribe at UK or Conversations on Eagle Mountain. You can also throw us a donation. Just head on over to buymeacoffee.com/thetribe.co.uk. And yeah, we'll see you next time for episode 46. Until then, bye.
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 Bye.